Okay, so the goal for tonight, I feel like most of the pre-Pesach shiurim have to do with preparing the house and koshering the kitchen and a lot of that. And there, Baruch Hashem, we have unbelievable community rabbis that offer those shiurim. And so those are available. And obviously with Shaila's, in that regard, people should certainly consult their shul rabbi. What I wanted to focus on tonight was practical, whether you're going away for Pesach, or you're going to be home, or you're going to be by your in-laws, or your parents, or you're going to be away.
Or your children.
Of course. I'm sorry.
Of course. Generational
stuff here. Yes. Wherever you're going to be, this is practical. Women at the Seder. Men at the Seder. Everyone's at the Seder. Seder is one of those times where everyone comes together. And so I wanted to focus on specifically, because we know very often in Halacha, the obligation and the mitzvos as it relates to men and as it relates to women is different. So it's sometimes important to know where exactly, what parts of the Seder we need to participate in, what parts of the Seder are less important, more important, which mitzvos of the Seder are more important. And one of the things, which is why I put that source on top, is that the Pesach Seder is actually a very, very unique scenario in the Jewish calendar, because as the Shulchan Aruch says, "Gamen Hashem chayavus ba'arba kosos v'chol mitzvos hanohagos boso laila." Women are obligated in the dalet kosos, which we'll come back to those later, and also all the mitzvos of the night. Women share an equal obligation with men on the Seder, which is different than Sukkot, and it's different than Rosh Hashanah, and so it's unique in that sense. And the Mishnah Berurah just pointed out, could go matzah, maror, v'amiras ha'agadah, right? So hopefully we'll get a chance to go through all of them and identify exactly certain halachos, certain parameters of what needs to be done to fulfill all the mitzvos, because there are a lot of them. The first mitzvah is a mitzvah that's not unique to Pesach. That is Simchas Yom Tov. There's a mitzvah on every Yom Tov to be happy. And the Gemara actually, this is actually a good one, the Gemara prescribes very clearly how to fulfill that mitzvah. So it says men should eat meat, typical, children should get candy, and women should get a nice piece of jewelry or an outfit or something. We mentioned this, I think, in the beginning of the year also on the Rosh Hashanah Shir, so it's a good opportunity that if you're looking for a new outfit or a new piece of jewelry, there's a mitzvah for your husband to buy one for you or your children or whoever's looking to buy you, if you have something coming up, it's a good excuse. So everyone should be sure to fulfill that mitzvah. That's an area where we like to be machmir. Make sure to get something extra nice for the holiday of Pesach. That's something that's important. But as we get more practical for the night, Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim, that's sort of like the centerpiece, the Haggadah, right? That's the centerpiece for everything we do, the story, telling over the story. So we're going to distinguish tonight between mitzvahs d'oraisa, mitzvahs which are mandated by the Torah, and mitzvahs d'rabbanan, those mitzvahs which are rabbinically mandated. Still commandments, but only d'rabbanan. So Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim, for men, is certainly d'oraisa. For women, it's actually a debate. So machlo, guess whether it's d'oraisa or d'rabbanan. So the Mishnah Berurah doesn't take sides, he just says women are obligated. So whether it's d'oraisa or d'rabbanan, there's certainly a mitzvah. Now, that's awesome. But it's important, because that means that when they're reading the Haggadah, sometimes it's very easy to get distracted, you want to make sure the soup's not burning, and you're up and down, but it's actually a mitzvah to be there and participate in the reading of the Haggadah. Another important factor is that you have to understand the Haggadah, which is very hard for everyone, because, you know, there's a lot of Hebrew, there's some Aramaic in there, there's a lot of all sorts of things. So, but it's important that the key, and the truth is this is important also for children, that part of the mitzvah is making sure the children understand what's going on. So we're just going to kind of rush through a lot of those parts that we don't sing. We're kind of missing a little bit of the point. So it's actually preferable if you're going to either read or translate or offer some type of summary for the key portions of the Haggadah, because that's the whole mitzvah. The whole mitzvah is to read it, to say it over to our children. And if we're just going to read a bunch of words in Hebrew, and they're going to be like, when do we get to sing Dayenu? So you kind of, it's kind of a disconnect there. So some of the key portions, not only, but some of them, are the portion of Arami Ovidavi, which is where Chazal sort of describe and expound on a few verses in the Chumash about the whole story, and we talk about all the makos and things like that. Also, the part where we describe Pesach, Matzah, and Marah, that's already towards the end of Magid, where people's stomachs are starting to rumble, and everyone's kind of like, all right, let's get to Shulchan Aruch already. So those are very key. Obviously, Manishtana is incredibly important. The fact that the children are participating, asking questions, Manishtana, and Avadim Hayinu, the answer to that. Those are some of the very, very key components that, A, we should all try and be at the table, participating in it, reading those, and also make sure that we have an idea what's going on, and our children have an idea what's going on if they're going to be there, because that is the entire mitzvah. And every year around Pesach, I always think of this quote from Shakespeare. I never liked Shakespeare in high school. I don't know if I still like Shakespeare. I don't really read Shakespeare. But this quote always stands out in my mind, which is, all the world's a stage, and all the men and women merely players. They have their exits and their entrances. What does that mean for us on the Seder night? Very often, when I have this feeling, when I read the Haggadah, I really feel like I'm just reading a script. It's like, pick up the cup, put down the cup, cover the matzah, uncover the matzah, point at this, read this. It's like, it really feels very, very scripted. And then I read a piece in the Sefer I have at home, and it actually says that's the point. It's a script. What does that mean, it's a script? It's the script for how we're supposed to relive and re-experience Yetzias Mitzrayim. That's what the night's about. Reliving and re-experiencing. And it's very experiential in the sense that it's not just a text, but we have, like any good play, you have props also, right? The matzah, the maror, the whole ka'ara, the whole table, everything is like a prop that we're using to engage everyone who's sitting at the table. The adults, the children, and that's what helps create that conversation at the table. In fact, the Gemara says there are certain things we do for no other reason, just to engage the children. Like it says, why do we dip, karpas, why do we do certain things? Oh, just so the children will ask questions. So we're so used to it, is it just being like a script that we read by rote? But it's supposed to be a script that we use to engage everyone at the table. So just something that I think you should keep in mind, that A, women are 100% obligated in Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim, without a doubt. And therefore, it's important to make sure we're at the table participating in that. And a key component of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim is, if you're going to be with your children, they're going to be there. There's tons. So make sure that they're engaged and they know what's going on as well. The next mitzvah on the list is matzah. Matzah is a mitzvah d'oraisa, and it's a mitzvah d'oraisa for men and for women, because it says the Gemara says that anyone who's obligated in the prohibition of eating chametz, sort of the opposite of not eating chametz, right? You're not allowed to eat chametz. So the opposite side of the coin is you have to eat matzah. We have a similar thing by Shabbos. It says anyone who's prohibited from doing malacha on Shabbos, they're obligated in kiddush on Shabbos. So you have those two opposite sides of the coin. So this is the same idea. That's why women are 100% obligated also in Kiddush Friday night, which is d'oraisa for everyone. So too, women and men are both obligated to eat matzah on Leil HaSeder. So how much matzah do you have to eat? Some people love matzah. I'm one of those people who doesn't like matzah so much. So it's always a challenge to make sure you have the right amount for all the proper times. So there are really three instances throughout the Seder that we eat matzah. Well, the first is Motzi Matzah. The second is Korech, and the last one is the Afikomen. So, one certainly fulfills the minimal obligation is one kezias. The last thing here is to describe exactly what the appropriate shiurim are, but kezias at each of those frames. Minimum is one. Ideally, you should try and have three kezesim of matzah. So, how much is a kezias? Okay, we'll put it in there now. So, I was just, very often, if you go to the stores, you see they sell these charts, kind of like this, and they say, well, you have to have this much matzah, and this much maror, and this much grape juice. They kind of measure it all out for you. So I was just talking to Rav Schechter on Sunday when he was here for the dinner, and I said, you know, I'm giving a shiur, and I'm just curious how much, you know, does Rav Schechter think that there's an appropriate kezias? So he said he did not think that the sheets were something that we had to be concerned about, and he said a kezias is like a big olive, not a small olive, like a big olive. So if you have a piece of matzah, he said, probably around that size is enough. If one wants to be strict, they can use the whole hand, but not, you know, I saw a sheet. Let's see, I don't want to, here. I would say it was, they recommended about that much, which I think is like a whole matzah, like a whole machine matzah. So Rosh Hashanah thought that this is certainly one that's a kezias, your hand. So so once you try and have a kezias at motzi matzah, at korech, and at afikomen.
A kezias at each one?
Yeah, a kezias at each one.
That's the maximum
amount? Well, the maximum, you can eat as much matzah as you like.
Is there a minimal amount of one kezias of all of them together?
So one should definitely not spread out kezias over three. That we'll get to the next year. We'll touch on it now. Kedei achilas pras. You have to eat that kezias within a maximum amount of time. Because if I eat one bite now and then in 20 minutes I take another bite, those two bites aren't connected. So there's a large range in the poskim between 2 minutes and like 9 minutes. So I think the middle of the road approaches 4 minutes, which is usually manageable to eat that much matzah in 4 minutes. I think everyone's able to handle that. So ideally, with those three times, one should try and have a kezias of matzah. Like I said, certainly, b'dieved, if someone was only able to eat one, that was fine. I know certain people with certain allergies, it's sometimes an issue, and other types of matzah. But ideally, three kezaisim at those three periods of the Seder, within 4 minutes. If anyone has any extenuating circumstances, certainly speak to a rabbi there, because one would be enough, or two, but that's for another time. Also, the matzah has to be shmura matzah. So, that usually the hand matzahs are all shmura matzah, the round ones that are like $20 for a pound. Those are shmura. Yeah, they might have, what? That's cheap, right, exactly. I mean, they really go up every year. They also make machine shmura. So usually when you buy like those 5 pound boxes of Streitz matzah, that's not shmura, it's kosher l'Pesach. But it's not shmura, it wasn't watched, it wasn't guarded from very, very early on in the process, either from when they harvested it or when they ground it. They guard it very carefully. There's always a Jew on the premises to make sure that it doesn't get mixed with any water. But they do sell machine shmura matzah. So they sell it by the box, and if one wanted that, that would be fine. There were some rabbis that actually thought that was preferable, because the machines are so good that there's not a chance that any chametz got in there, because the machine is so efficient at processing the matzah. Most people, if you have a minhag one way or the other, follow the minhag. My father always used the hand matzah, so I use the hand matzah. But whatever anyone's minhag, it just has to be shmura.
And that's
halacha.
That's preferable.
Shmura is halacha that it should be shmura. The machine matzahs, other machine matzahs, also depending on how extenuating the circumstances are, they might have a minimum level of shmira, of watching, but l'chakila, certainly it's 100% preferable that they should be shmura, either the hand or the machine. That, there isn't necessarily a preference. Okay. Marar, the next on our list. Marar is bitter herbs. So, this is a mitzvah derabanan for everyone, men and women. It was only do'oraisa in the times when we had the Korban Pesach. Because the pasuk says, "Al matzos umurim yochluhu." You should eat the Korban Pesach with matzah and maror. So maror depends on having Korban Pesach. There's another pasuk that says, "Ba'erev tochlu matzos." Eat matzah that night. So even if you don't have a Korban Pesach, we eat matzah. But the maror is only derabanan. So it's a little mitzvah. We all heard the Megillah. It's also a mitzvah derabanan. So we like mitzvahs derabanan too. The question always becomes, what to do for maror? So the Mishnah actually has a list of which vegetables are acceptable for maror, and we usually complicate. You have to like look in an art scroll to kind of get the translation, because they're all vegetables that I never really heard of, except the first one. The first one is chasa. Chasa, we know, is lettuce, right? Everyone knows lettuce. So that's why many, many people use lettuce at the Seder. There is a minute to use horseradish. Also, many people see it's like that white root that, I don't even know if they sell it all year round, but certainly around Pesach it always comes out, and it's extremely horrible tasting. If anyone here has ever eaten any, it tastes terrible.
That's what my father, I mean, he didn't even grind it. He just cut off a piece and ate it.
Absolutely, my father does too, just like a rock.
Right.
It's horrible tasting. When I was younger, we used to always have a competition to see who could cough less. You know, we would like eat a chunk and we'd be sitting there at the table, our faces would be like bright red. Oh, it's if you ever see anyone who has it, it's really bitter to watch, you know, let alone taste. Now, the truth is that historically, it's actually a question where this custom came from to use horseradish, because it's unclear if it's any of the things listed in the Mishnah. Especially the Mishnah, the Gemara goes on to describe the Mishnah as leafy vegetables. The root, it's a root. It's not leafy. Maybe it has leaves, but that part's a root. So Some claim that the milling actually developed in Europe, because in Europe, in Poland, in March, lettuce was not available. The ground was like a rock. You couldn't really grow anything, and therefore the milling developed to use horseradish, because it's a very horrible tasting thing, and it reminds you of Mars. So certainly if that's someone's minhag, family minhag, continue to do that. If it's not your minhag, or you just don't like it because it tastes horrible, lettuce is 100% preferable, maybe even lechachila. So I know my father, some people use both. So within lettuce, the minhag is to use romaine lettuce, even though I think that I saw some people say, really, if you're going to use lettuce, any lettuce would be okay, but I think romaine is certainly the custom. So things to be careful with romaine lettuce, number one is bugs. Exactly, everyone knows bugs, so certainly one should be careful with the bugs. They should clean the lettuce thoroughly and properly, and you can check, I know the CRC has on the website a video on how to do it, and you know, if anyone has any questions, I'm sure there are enough available resources to figure out how to clean it. Yes?
Can I make a comment about that?
Please.
So when they say they have a lettuce checking policy, I just feel like I need to tell people it's not so scary.
It's not
so scary. It's they make it seem like it's this big process, and to be honest, I haven't watched the new one, but we leave all the time year round, and it's along the lines of rinsing and looking. So you know,
and it's a percentage of looking. It's not going to be every single piece.
Right. So just like they make it seem like it's this big ordeal, and I don't think it's such a big deal. So just to kind of take away some of that
anxiety, that romaine lettuce anxiety.
At the same time,
yeah.
Rinsing, I really feel like it's not like this major, like microscope, 8 hours type of feeling. I just, when they say they have a demonstration of it, I want to go see what they're going to demonstrate because I think it's really interesting. It's rinsing and looking, and you're good. I mean, whatever the CRC says.
Right. No, I agree. I don't think it's that. So.
You don't have to do my house. You don't have to do it on dressing.
Right. I'm not, you know.
Sorry,
no. It's very important. So, yes, at HTC, that's where I'm having that demonstration, right? At that whole Pesach fair. So, I'm going to be having a demonstration there. There's also a video online, and it's, like I said, you can.
Entertaining video.
It's an entertaining video? Okay. So, there you go. I saw one of these videos once with a different vegetable, and it was just I was a little grossed out. I haven't eaten that vegetable since, because you saw how many bugs are actually there. But that's a separate conversation for another share. So if you're going to use romaine lettuce, make sure to clean it appropriately. And also, again, you have to be careful to have a kazayas. So a kazayas here is a little trickier because it's very airy and leafy and thin. My impression, again, based on our conversation with Shachter, is two full leaves, not those itty-bitty leaves when you get to the middle, but like two full leaves are probably okay for kazayas. Again, the other one recommended a full sheet of romaine lettuce. So if you're having a seder with like 15 people, as many people do, and you have to make a full sheet of lettuce for maror for everyone, then you have the cleaning lettuce anxiety. When it's, so a kazayas, my impression is that two full leaves is certainly enough. One should have that for maror. And for korech, one does not need to. I don't believe one needs to have a kazayas of maror, but one should have some maror in there. So one piece, two pieces, whatever you like. One thing that kind of goes along with maror, which I forgot to put on the list here, but is charoses, which is my favorite part of the seder because it just tastes so good. You're eating like matzah, which tastes horrible, and maror, which tastes horrible, and you know. So at least we have one thing that tastes good at the seder. So we dip the maror into the charoset. Now, some people, yes?
Getting back to the four questions.
Yes.
I was always bothered by the fact that the kids are asking about why we dip twice, but they haven't seen the second dipping yet.
Yes, that is an excellent question. I don't have, off the top of my head, a good explanation. Although they're asking about eating matzah maror, we haven't eaten those things either, but I guess they kind of know it's coming. So maybe they always have, right, I guess they're on the table, so that's where they know. I guess your charos is on the table too, so they probably see that and they know you're dipping. But it's a fair question. Before we go on to charos, I want to touch one more thing on maror. Using lettuce, people are like, wait a second, my lettuce isn't bitter. Right? It's supposed to be bitter herbs. Lettuce isn't bitter. What's the deal with that? So there are a few approaches. One approach, meaning within the camp of people that say, there is a camp that says that's why you shouldn't use lettuce. But within the camp of people that say you should use lettuce, There are a few explanations. Explanation number one is that maybe if you would leave the lettuce in the ground a little extra, it would get bitter. Those lettuces never make it to the market at Jewel because they're bitter. Right? And if anyone ever had, like, if you ever go to a restaurant and you get a salad, and sometimes the leaves are a little bitter if they're like a little bit going or a day old. So that happens. So lettuce leaves do get bitter tasting after they're not fresh. We always have fresh produce. So that's why we're not used to bitter tasting lettuce that much. So in actuality, lettuce could taste bitter. Second thing is that also our vegetables are scientifically engineered to be as good tasting as possible. Meaning if you would grow romaine lettuce in your backyard, it probably wouldn't taste as good as the one that you buy in the store because that's scientifically engineered to taste really, really, really good. Right?
Yeah, the stuff in your backyard always tastes better.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, I guess people who grow like tomatoes and cucumbers and those things.
Lettuce too.
Lettuce too?
It tastes better. It's actually fresher. It's better when it's fresher.
Oh, okay. You still have my first reason though, that if it's old, it's bitter. I actually once was working in a community and I spoke to someone who was, I guess, a botanist. Right, he was a botanist, and he said that he did some research and some historical thing, and he discovered the lettuce that they had in the time of the Gemara, and it was some certain type of like weed lettuce, and he ordered it. He found one place on the internet, and he ordered it, and he said it was bitter. It was really, it wasn't like sharp tasting like maror, but it was bitter. So so it could be that their lettuce was a little different than romaine lettuce, but like I said, all types of lettuce are certainly acceptable. Now with the charoses, what one has to be careful of is, and you see many people do this, is they take it and they just like shovel up like a whole lot of charoses and they eat it. So that's actually not the proper way to do things. We're supposed to dip it in and then kind of shake off the charoset and not have a lot there, just kind of have a little whatever is left and then eat the mara. And then afterwards, you could have as much charoses as you want. That dig right in. But for the kazayas of mara, it's actually you're supposed to shake off the charoset. So that's something that people don't know. As far as what should be in the charoset, the Gemara says we should have some wine. Well, Tosaf wine, which is Zecher L'Adam. It's a reminder of the blood that was spilled in Mitzrayim, and it should be thick. So many people put like dates or something like that makes it thicker. That's to remind us of the mortar. And there should be something sweet or tart. The Gemara says Zecher L'Tapuach, because the Gemara describes that the women, when they would give birth, they would kind of go off into the field and there was a certain apple tree and they would have the baby there and the baby was nourished and protected there because obviously there was a decree to throw all the babies into the river. So they would go under this tapuach tree, this apple tree, and they would have their babies there and that kind of protected them. So to remember that, that's why many people put apples in. And Tosfot also quotes that there's a minhag to put certain fruit in that B'nai Yisrael are compared to in Shir Hashirim. Shir Hashirim is the Megillah that we read on Pesach, and it's a love story between the Jewish people and Hashem. And so in poetic fashion, the Jewish people are described in terms of certain fruit. So nuts is one of them, like almonds or walnuts or something like that. And rimonim, some people might have a custom to put that. So whatever your homemade recipe for charoses is, you probably have some or all of that in there.
I have a quick question. When you talk about a kazayas, a charoset, but you're shaking it off. Does that mean you have to have a certain amount when you start? And then?
Oh, no. There's no need to have a kazayas or charoset.
Okay. Because I heard you say kazayat and
charoset. Oh, really? No. Sorry, when you have your kazayat of maror, you shouldn't have like a glob of charoset on it.
There was maybe like some amount you had to start with and shake it all out or something.
No, not to my knowledge. Because the Gemara describes the whole mitzvah of charoset is that it reminds us of the dam, the blood, or the apple tree, or the mortar. So it's just like a visual reminder.
Like a minimal amount that you No,
the Sfarim doesn't say that you should taste. It's just the idea is to dip and shake it off. Again, kind of like an act that helps us in the reminding process. Like I said, I always eat a little bit anyways, because why not? Tastes good. Okay, so that's matzah and mara. Next is the talad koso, the 4 cups of wine. So this is also a mitzvah derabanan for everyone, men and women across the board. And the 4 cups are kiddush is one. At the end of Magid is the other one. It's a bracha of Gal Yisrael. Then after benching and after Hallel. Those are the 4 cups. So everyone should try and have those. There's an old debate about wine versus grape juice. So certainly Rav Moshe Feinstein says it's preferable to drink wine because the 4 cups are supposed to be like a toast, right? We're toasting to our freedom. And so most people don't make toasts over grape juice. make toast over wine. It's a more special drink. So, ideally, if one is able to drink 4 cups of wine, they should. On the other hand, you are definitely yotzi with grape juice, and there's a whole spectrum. So, obviously, if someone's going to have like 4 cups of 15% dry red wine, so they might not make it to the end of the meal, you know. There's a Gemara that says that there were a few rabbis that they drank the 4 cups of wine and they had a headache till Shavuos. So certainly no one should have a headache till Shavuos. And therefore, there's the spectrum. This is the Mascaro Diasti in the title. That there's a range. So the highest level, theoretically, is red wine. But then there's white wine, and then there's grape juice. And there's all sorts of combinations. You could mix a little grape juice in with your wine. However it's going to work for you, that you're going to be able to make it to the end of the Seder, ideally that is 100% what you should do. So definitely ideally red wine, but all the way on the other end of the spectrum, grape juice is 100% okay. So wherever you fall within that range, you should know yourself. Like I said, if you're going to have a monster headache from bicarpas, if you have wine at Kiddush, so stay away from that, and grape juice will be 100% okay. And the size of the cup, as we're doing all this year now, so there's a mitzvah to drink rov kos, majority of your cup. Now, how much does your cup have to be? So ideally around 3.5 ounces. You shouldn't use like a little shot glass. It should be a substantial kos. Most standard size kosot that you have in your cabinet are probably that size. But also, since the mitzvah is to have majority of the cup, and you're drinking wine, this is a pretty big cup. You might not want to use a cup this size, because to drink majority of that of wine, again, you're going to be in a lot of trouble. So measure out the cup. About 3.5 ounces is the size of the cup, and majority of that. That should be, everyone should be good to go with that shear. And the last mitzvah, Haseba. So Haseba is also a mitzvah derabanan of reclining, which is a display of our freedom. So this is actually one where the Gemara says, women are exempt from Haseba because it apparently wasn't the custom, proper respect for a woman to recline. However, the Gemara says, Nashim Chashuvos, important women, should recline. And already the Rishonim make a comment that they say, all the women nowadays are Chashuvos. All the women in our communities are important. So I think that still holds true. Everyone here is important, and therefore everyone is obligated to recline. We recline on the left side. That's for health reasons or whatever. We recline on the left. When reclining, it's important, because sometimes you see people doing like something like this for the reclining. Now, right now I'm not reclining at all. I'm just kind of suspended in midair. So this chair has an arm. So you could recline on the arm. That's reclining, because I'm leaning on something. You should actually put your weight on something. So that could be the table, that could be the arm. You could kind of turn the chair a little bit and lean on the back of the chair. But you should actually be leaning on something, ideally. Because this is just kind of floating, not leaning. So one should lean and try and lean on an actual item. I know everyone has the pillow. My dad still uses the pillow I made when I was like 4. Survives year to year, it's amazing, and still pretty comfortable, I have to say. So that's the mitzvah of Haseba. What requires Haseba? So Haseba, we lean for anything that's happy. So that means matzah, 4 cups of wine, not marah. Marah is bitter, so we're eating the bitter herbs. We certainly don't want to, you know, be like, hey, look at this awesome party we have eating terrible tasting horseradish root. So we don't do that. If someone forgot to lean, so there's a little bit of a discussion. But nowadays, we say, b'di'eved, if you forgot to lean, you don't have to go back and drink your wine or grape juice or eat your matzah. You're good, even though you forgot to lean. So, Haseba is for matzah and the wine, not for the marah. Karpas, I think people do different things for leaning during karpas. I don't think there's any real decision on that one. You guys lean during karpas? I don't remember. Every year it's one of those things where we're like, do we lean for Karpas? Do we not lean? I don't know. I wouldn't worry about it for Karpas. Oh, Karpas isn't on the list. Karpas can be any vegetable. There's a wide array of vegetables many people use. Parsley Parsley is another thing that I know there's a lot of dirt in parsley. There can also be bugs in parsley, so careful for that one. Celery or radish, those are fairly common. And there's a...
My mother used potatoes.
Potatoes is also very common. There's a community in New Jersey where the rabbi of the community uses bananas, because when he came to this country, he wanted people to know that bananas are actually ha'adama, even though people commonly assume them to be fruit, they're actually ha'adama, and so karpas can be any ha'adama, so he chose to use bananas. In the salt water, I don't know how well that tasted, but probably not so good. Yeah. I'm not sure what to make of that one. The karpas also, one thing for Ashkenazim, we're careful, we should not have a kazayas of karpas. So even though you're famished and you're thinking like, I'm not going to eat another thing for another 3 hours because my kids are going to say like all these divrei Torah that they came home from school with, one still has to hold back and should not have a kazayas of karpas. So if you're having, you know, celery, make sure you have like a piece like this. You don't want to have like six pieces of celery.
A little of a lot of things.
If they're spread out.
I'm just asking that because there's someone I know who puts out many different vegetables.
Uh-huh. And they have a little bit of each?
Different people do different
ones. Ah, so they want to accommodate everyone.
Yeah.
So it's interesting. Svardim specifically do eat a kazayas, and Ashkenazim specifically don't. So.
No, they don't.
Svardim do not?
I specifically told not to. Because then you have an issue with bracha chona, and like there's a whole...
Yeah, so that's why Ashkenazim don't. I think I guess the difference Svardim and Nagim, you could look again.
My husband said that we don't do it.
Hmm?
I grew up Svardim also.
Also, you didn't?
I didn't.
So, okay. So
like, you see in my family, so there's just a whole hodgepodge of different, like Svardim, Ashkenazim, Nagim. We did, and then when I got married, my husband said, don't.
Right, so I think more correct is not to, because again, you get into this bracha chrona problem, because you're not going to eat for a very, very, very long time. So that's karpas. Also on our list, just keep it to a small shear. We'll just take the last 8 minutes. We'll do a brief review. That first is Simchas Yontov, which one can fulfill any time between now and Pesach. Pick out a nice outfit, a nice piece of jewelry. It's important. The Shulchan Aruch knows it's kfi mamono. So depends. My wife is married to someone in Kolel. So, you know, she'll get what she gets. Other people might get something else. So, either way, that's an important mitzvah. And also, it should be candy for the kids. Also, for the kids, one of the things we do to keep the kids engaged is it says there should be candy or some type of snack to keep them up during the Seder. The Seder goes late. No? So, that's another thing that that says, A, for Simchas Yontov, they should get candy. B, to keep them engaged during the Seder, they should get candy. Then we spoke about the central mitzvah of the night, Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim, which is what we call Magid. And we said there are a lot of components. Men and women are obligated in this mitzvah. And therefore it's important to be at the table, be participating in the reading of the Haggadah, because we have to. It's a mitzvah. And also it's a lot of fun. And that's when we get to engage our family. It's the whole purpose of this mitzvah is v'higadata l'bincha, meaning this is sort of the paradigm for passing on the tradition, right? We passed whatever we believe we experienced this, you know, we had many siddurim, and now we're passing that on to our children, and that's part of why every family is unique. Every family has their own minhagim, or their own divrei Torah, you know, some people, they put the matzah over their shoulder, and some people wear a kittel, and some people don't, and it's very personalized. And this is probably more so than any other thing we have in the Jewish calendar, any other mitzvah that we have in the whole calendar, it's so unique family by family, and no two siddurim that you go to will be the same for that reason. And that's the mitzvah of Yigadat al-Bincha, passing this on to our children, and that's why we're part of this stage, right? All the world's a stage, like Shakespeare said. It's part of the stage is passing on this message, passing on these customs, and passing over the story. So, make sure we're there, certainly for the key parts where we actually say out the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim, which is the section that begins Arami Oved Avi, and also Pesach Matzah Morah, where it says not only do I tell my children the story, but I tell them the mitzvos. Right? There's a mitzvah of Korban Pesach, which unfortunately we don't have nowadays, and there's the mitzvah of Matzah and the mitzvah of Morah. We describe that to our children. They're engaged from the beginning with the Manish Tana. And this intergenerational conversation is really the centerpiece of the holiday, so we should make sure that we're there participating in part of it and not checking on the soup. The soup's also important. That's another mitzvah. That's true. It's Shabbos, so you can't even worry about the soup. Not a chance. So, for sure, really no excuse. So hopefully everyone will take advantage and fulfill this mitzvah, because it's actually one of the most special and unique ones, and it's also a unique opportunity to pass on the things that we value more than anything else to our children. We spoke about each of the mitzvahs. So the mitzvah of matzah, we said, there are three distinct points: motzi matzah, korech, and afikomen. Each point, one should try and have a kezias. So we said a kezias is about the size of the palm. I think b'dieved this would be okay, but at least l'chachila, everyone could probably handle that much matzah. And one should try and eat that within 4 minutes.
Can you just go back again to the romaine lettuce? Mm-hmm. You're talking about 2 pieces this big?
No, this is for matzah.
Okay, so how much for
romaine lettuce?
My estimate. 2 weeks, but like, you know.
I said two.
Big leaves on the outside, you know, if you're not using them.
Definitely two, right. Two of the larger leaves.
That's a lot.
Maybe the hearts? Am I thinking of the hearts?
Yeah.
Maybe, is that what they say? Maybe 2 leaves of the hearts.
On the outside can be like this.
No, the heart. No, the hearts.
The middle leaves.
Probably the middle leaves, meaning the outside of the hearts, I think is what I'm thinking of. They're about that big? Is that a fair estimate? This is about all I got right here.
Okay.
That's the best you're going to get. So my guess is 2 of those size leaves, which is extremely scientific, as you can tell. You're not going to find any Hilchos Pesach Sefer that says, how much bar is you? That much. Just give me a picture of me holding on my hands like that. So I think about 2 of those leaves. All right, the outer leaves, like of the thing, those could be like that big. Right, no, so you probably don't need 2 of those. My guess is 2 of those.
Okay.
So, again, matzah, we said 3 kezesim at those 3 opportunities. Those 3 points in the Seder. Maror, we said either horseradish or romaine lettuce. Romaine lettuce, obviously, watch out for the bugs. About 2 of those pieces. Again, one should eat 1 kezias within 4 minutes. And we spoke about the charos, said that one should not take a scoopful at this point in the Seder. They should just kind of dip in, shake off the charoset, and eat the maror, eat the romaine lettuce or whatever it is, and then indulge in the charoses during the meal, or whenever they would like to. Then we spoke about the dalet koso, which are kiddush at the end of makid, Gal Yisrael, benching, and halal. And again, it's a mitzvah derabanan. We spoke about the spectrum, ideally being red wine, but any combination in between, all the way down to grape juice. One should not drink anything that's going to knock them out till next year's Pesach.
Does it matter what percentage alcohol is in the red wine?
No, it doesn't matter.
So
meaning, if I take
alcohol, red wine is the same equivalent as being with the top, right?
Yes, presumably, because the idea is that it should be toast. Now, if you take the low alcohol red wine, you mix like a third of that with grape juice, so then you've kind of you're kind of close to grape juice there. You know, you probably wouldn't even sense that. But any wine drink is wine if you could sense that there's a little bit of a alcoholic kick to the drink. And we said one should have, the kos should be about around 3.5 ounces, which is certainly your average kos is that size, and make sure at each time to drink majority of the cup of wine, or grape juice, or whatever it is you're going to be drinking. Haseba is the mitzvah derabanan of reclining, so we should try and recline on an item, and we recline during the 4 cups of wine, and during the matzah, not during the maror. Some have the custom to also recline during the reading of the Haggadah. So if that's your custom, go right ahead. If you're not comfortable and your back's hurting, do not feel like you have to. And the last thing also, just to end with, and one other important halacha, is that we don't eat anything after the afikomen, because we try and maintain the flavor of the matzah. That seems strange, because matzah doesn't really have much of a flavor. So like an hour later, you don't taste it anymore. So the actual original halacha was that you don't eat anything after you eat the Karban Pesach. The Karban Pesach was the last thing they ate. So lamb, some people eat, I like lamb. Lamb has a very strong flavor. And if you don't eat anything after eating lamb, you will have lamb breath for a long time. So that was the point. The point was you were supposed to have lamb breath for a long time. So you wouldn't eat anything after eating lamb. After eating matzah, it's a little bit silly because you don't really taste it. But that's the minute, because it reminds us of the Karban Pesach. So after matzah, we don't need anything. One can drink water. That's okay. Obviously, if one is in a dire situation, so then one should make it. It's just really a minhag not to eat anything after
you're
the...
You're going to be drinking wine, too.
Well, yeah, oh, exactly. Additionally, you will be drinking 2 cups of wine afterwards, so that's also for sure that's going to wash away the taste of the matzah. But like I said, the minig remains in order to remind us of what was the minig not to eat anything after Korban Pesach. I don't know. I haven't experimented. If you have 2 cups of wine after eating lamb, what your best can be. That's an experiment for another time. I'm just going to borrow this. Next week, so first, thank you everyone for coming. And again, thank you, Tammy, for hosting. Next week, Rabbi Brand will be sharing insights into the Haggadah. So everyone will have something beautiful and lovely to share to keep this intergenerational conversation going. That year will be at the home of Amy Kesar, which is 31 Williamsburg Lane, which is right off East Prairie. For anyone who doesn't know, it's kind of like a dead-end type of thing, and it's a little confusing because the numbers just go in order around the whole thing. So you'll probably just turn into a few cul-de-sacs before you actually find the right one. But I would certainly encourage everyone to go because, like we said, the centerpiece is this story that we're trying to pass on, and there's tons and tons. The Haggadah, I think, is maybe after the Chumash, the most commented on text that we have, and so there are tons of beautiful insights that Rabbi Brand is in the process of collecting, and he will share those with you, and then you will go on and share that with your family. So I wish everyone a Chag Kasher v'Sameach and Hatzlacha wherever you're going to be in preparing, and have a great night.
Thank you.